helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. I'm out of town for a few days, and the world seems to go absolutely crazy.
I'm out of it. For a little while, everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Yes, the Nashville shooting happened before I left, but while I was gone, it appears that many of the asylums have been taken over by the inmates. Then we had the Trump indictment, and the voices of the lunatics on both sides just exploded. And as if censorship weren't already bad enough in America, we have a bill in Congress that seems to want to get rid of foreign influence by allowing the United States to censor more and more people. Sometimes I just feel like Charlton Heston to scream like he did in the movie Planet of the Apes.
It's a madhouse! A madhouse!
Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here at the Constitution Study. I don't think we're a madhouse, but boy, it sure seems like we're living in one lately. And it seems almost like the inmates are running the asylum. And isn't it interesting how it always seems to happen when you're away? You know, I had to take a few days recently to deal with some family business. Nothing huge, but it meant I was away from the world for a couple of days. And I figured that's fine. I'll take a couple days and get caught up on the lunacy. And it just, I haven't been able to dig out because there has been so much lunacy. Now, I want to take a look at these three topics. I chose these three topics: the updates on the Nashville shooting, the President Trump indictment, and the Restrict Act, because to me they are maybe the greatest example of not just the madhouse, but the tyranny of emotion and rhetoric over logic and reason and facts and evidence. This gut emotional reaction that is driving so much of what I think is driving so much of the insanity. So again, let's start right where I said we're going to start with the Nashville shooting. I've talked a bit about it, but there have been quite a few updates since I last talked to you about this tragedy. Now, I've said repeatedly, this is not a news program. We're not here trying to break news, which is why I want to take some time and calmly look and wait for the information to come out. Now, one piece of information that has come out, we reviewed the body cam from the police that entered the building and, let's say, dispatched the mass murderer. I thought it was very well done. Yeah, there was a couple things that I thought could be done better, but I mean, nitpicky things. Overall, they showed up, they went in, they dealt with the problem quickly. The other part of it is the 911 calls. We've gotten transcripts, I believe, of the 911 calls. And I noticed something very interesting. Other people had mentioned it, but there was something very interesting. The first 911 call came in from a female. She was inside the school. She was hiding in art room closets with children. Now, she did that because she said to the 911 officer, "I think I heard gunshots." Now, keep that in mind for just a second while I go to the next report, which was a male who called in. This was recorded at 10:12 a.m., saying there was an active shooter and started describing the person. But they said they came through in between the sanctuary, where the sanctuary is, and the overhead entrance. There's a side door on the end. You'll see he shot the window out to enter the school. You'll see broken glass all through there. Now, first of all, that's some great information and someone who's heads up. This is where the person entered. Here's how you can identify it. But this is the part that I hadn't thought of at first. You see, the school had a perimeter. The doors were locked, and the didn't prevent the shooter from getting the murderer from getting into the school, but the murderer had to shoot out the glass. In other words, the murderer had to announce herself and probably her intentions with gunfire, which led to a couple of interesting things. It meant there were an extra few seconds for that lady and the children to hide in the art room closet. It meant the person who saw this had the opportunity to, again, find cover, call for assistance, give detailed information. For the people who've looked at this and said, see, glass doors don't work, well, again, they didn't keep the murderer out, but they did force the murderer to start her events early, before she entered the building. I'd much rather have the murderer announce their intentions before they enter the building than when they first encounter people and human beings. So that was the first thing that came to light I thought was rather interesting. There also apparently is evidence that the shooter was trying to enter barricaded classrooms, which, again, another part of looking at the safety of the children. These classrooms were barricaded. They were designed, I'm assuming they were designed, and I'm assuming that the school had a policy and had done drills, lockdown drills, to allow students to barricade in place. Again, those extra few seconds of the murderer having to shoot a door out to get in gave teachers the opportunity to get their children into a barricaded position. And again, the murderer could not enter because those rooms were barricaded. Now, what I find most interesting is all of the, well, I'll call them reports. It's not reporting. All of the media hype about it's the gun, it's the gun, it's the gun. They pay no attention to anything else. All the Democrats that are pushing for this, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later, not realizing, look what this school did. Yes, six people died, three children died, and that's a tragedy. But how many would have died if this disturbed young woman had been able to gain access to the building before people knew she was a danger, had been able to gain access to a classroom or an auditorium or other place where children were gathered? How much worse could it have been? Doesn't mean it's any less of a tragedy. But what I see here is a school that has prepared, and in my mind, done a pretty good job. Now, reports from the Nashville police force claim that this person had been planning this attack for months. Again, I have yet to see her manifesto. The last I saw, none of the law enforcement agencies, Nashville Police, Tennessee State Police, FBI, ATF, have actually given a motive behind the shooting. There's been a lot of speculation, and that's the other thing that really concerns me. Not that people speculate. I mean, people are always going to speculate. But how speculation has been turned into facts and agendas. She planned this for a while. Why is that important? It wasn't an impulse shooting. From my mind, the fact that it was planned, right? This makes it truly a mass murder. But it also means that she took time to consider her options. In fact, one of the options that I understand was considered is she was actually looking at another school. She chose the Nashville Covenant School because they did not have armed security on premises. Now, again, this is what I've seen reported. I'm not 100% sure of the basis for that. But if that's true, that's another little piece of the puzzle that we should consider. Why did this person go for the soft target rather than the more hardened targets that some people have been calling for? Now, this information about the planning and the choice of target apparently comes from information, notes that she left behind both in her bedroom and in her motor vehicle that are being studied by law enforcement. And, the fact that it was planned, the fact that she looked for the most promising target should tell us, you think about it. Think of the security you go through to get to an airport. or to get into some, even, you know, not only government buildings, but some corporate buildings. You would think, you know, we would want a little more protection around our children. And for those who are concerned about the psychological impact of not wanting to turn our schools into police states, there are plenty of ways to provide additional security without turning schools into into these, you know, hardened police locations. Again, we saw some of them in Nashville, and hopefully we'll learn and we'll come up with some more. But what I find interesting is the sudden dismissal, the sudden ignoring of this woman's transgender identification. Apparently, CBS, according to reports, CBS staffers received a directive not to mention the fact that the 28-year-old mass murderer had a transgender status. Now, I don't know how far she had gone. Was she on hormones? Had she had any surgery? Was it simply, you know, using pronouns? I don't know. We just know that she identified herself as transgender, but isn't it interesting how some outlets want to ignore that particular fact, which may or may not have a bearing on why she committed this atrocity. Now, CBS wasn't alone. Twitter, when we all thought when Elon Musk bought Twitter, all the problems go away. No, they restricted the account of Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene simply because she put up an image of a poster for a trans radical activist network calling for a day of vengeance. So we see, you know, the problems at Twitter are not over. We're going to punish the people that are pointing out, hey, there are people doing that are planning vengeance. Vengeance has kind of a violent theme to it. I thought we were supposed to identify red flags of potential problems. We're always told that red flag laws are supposed to help us all protect ourselves from crazy people with guns. Well, here we have a red flag of potential violence, and a Twitter account gets shut down for pointing that out. And apparently Ms. Taylor Greene's account isn't the only one. Multiple accounts were restricted or shut down because they pointed out this rally that the trans community was putting on for a day of vengeance. Now, that Day of Vengeance event was canceled, but that hasn't stopped different LGBTQ communities from having their own rallies, shall we say. Now, this Day of Vengeance was planned for Saturday, April 1st, and it was called off because they were afraid of threats to the life and safety of trans people. Well, see, that was after the mass shooting in Nashville. I thought, maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe people will be a little pissed at us. But at least three other states had their own protests, including, by the way, Nashville, Tennessee, where protesters stormed the state capitol while the legislature was in session.
No action! No peace! No action! No peace! No action! No peace! No action! No peace!
But that wasn't the only demonstration. There was one, it looks like it was out in the hallway.
Every death is a tragedy, y'all. 7 lives.
Now, what you can't see in all of this is there's groups of people with holding 7 fingers up.
I'd say there were 7 victims.
Yep.
So you have these people saying there were 7 victims. Wait a second. No. Who's this 7th victim? It wasn't the victim. It wasn't the victim. It was a perpetrator. The young lady who attacked and killed these people, they want to list as a victim. Why? Because of the tribal think, because of the group think. I've talked about this before. We have to stand with this woman because she was one of us. Even though she committed a heinous crime, she's a victim. Now, there's more I want to talk about, but I've got a break coming up, and I don't want to interrupt that flow. So before we go to break, please head over to the website constitutionstudy.com. It's where you can find everything you need to know about the Constitution Study. You can join a mailing list. You can ask a question. You can ask me to answer it right here on the radio. You can support the work that we're doing. You can find articles. You can find videos. I'm working on a new program that will help people who want to learn and study not just a constitution, but just about anything that'll have a good foundation to which we will then start studying the Constitution. I call it the overall program's Constitution Study Patriots. This segment is going to be called Constitution Scholars. If you sign up for one of the mailing lists, you'll be notified when I bring this forth, as I start announcing it. That's the best way to find out what's going on. Now, also, I'd love it if you went to and checked out Healthy Cell. They are a leading innovator in supplements designed to work at the cellular level to help you live a better life. So they have a product called REM Sleep that is the only sleep supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep, to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep more soundly so you can wake up refreshed. Not with drugs or chemicals, simply with vitamins and supplements. So if you're tired of being tired and you want to get a good night's sleep, try REM Sleep. And because you're an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order of REM Sleep or anything at Healthy Cell just by using the code OUTLOUD. So please go to healthycell.com. Check out all of their products. Try the REM Sleep and any of their other products. Put them in your cart. When you check out, use the code OUTLOUD. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order. And we'll be right back after this break.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. Healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD. Healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Did you know that doctors and nurses have been swabbing their noses with povidone iodine to protect from airborne threats like colds, flus, and pandemic-era strains for decades? Cofix RX took that idea and made a more complete nasal formula with lasting cleansing effects. Maybe you're traveling soon or going to an event. Are you concerned somebody nearby might be sick? Maybe the office or classroom stresses you out. Get yourself a bottle of Cofix RX nasal solution. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofix RX nasal solution cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD at CofixRX.com.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
That certainly seems what life is like in America today. Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. And yeah, I think parts of this country have gone absolutely mad. We talked in the first segment about a lot of the madness going on around the murder, the mass murder at the Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee. Sadly, there is plenty more to go around. As I mentioned last week, you know, it seemed like it took no time at all. The bodies, I don't think, were even cold before there were those calling for the disarming of innocent Americans because of the acts of what is turning out more and more to be a mentally disturbed, I call her a young lady. She's half my age, so 28 to me is still young. Not, shouldn't be childish, but young. But one of the latest examples is the minority leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, who made demands of the Republican-led House to vote on gun control legislation immediately. Why? Well, you see, they had the Nashville shooting, and there was a fervor for this. There was an emotional excitement. Well, how about we find out, would the gun control that is being proposed, the legislation being proposed, actually have done any good in this situation? As I understand it, this lady legally purchased her weapons, the pistols and the rifle. So would this have stopped that? If they had banned the AR-15 and the AR-15 pistol that she's used, could she simply have used, another semi-automatic firearm? It's the emotional reaction. We have to do something, and we have to do something now. But we never seem to take the rational step of saying, will this something make things better? Or will these things simply punish innocent people? That's they're talking about coming and taking my gun, outlawing my gun, which legally they can't because that would be an ex post facto law. But they're trying to restrict that. But I did nothing wrong. My gun did nothing wrong. Yet that didn't stop students at the Metro Nashville Public School from walking out and protest and demanding action against gun violence. Now, here's the question that first came to mind. Were they instigated? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe directly, maybe indirectly. I mean, look at, who's the guy? David Hogue, who has gotten all this notoriety for simply being an anti-gunner because he happened to survive a mass murder. Now, I understand children, right? If you're under 18, you're still a child. I understand them having this emotional reaction. But why are they focusing on the gun and the gun violence rather than the fact that there was a woman who broke into an elementary school for the sole purpose of killing people? No, we got to focus on the gun. Maybe if we focused on the gun, then we would ignore the other problems that are going on. We'd ignore the fact that in many places, schools are not as secure as they could be, maybe as they should be, that we don't have a good process. Our communities are not dealing with mentally disturbed people as well as they could be. Or maybe we could deal with a much more serious human problem. And that is the tendency towards violence. A recent video has gone viral of a trans activist demanding trans people act violently. I won't play the audio because I'd spend too much time bleeping out her language. But she goes on this rant calling for trans people to fight them. I'm not sure who the them is because I couldn't stomach listening to her to her language. But apparently, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation is aware of this. But she's specifically telling trans people in Tennessee to be violent. I understand that. There's a human aspect that says when I see something outrages me, I want to get violent. We see it in everything from the person that flies off the handle when something doesn't go their way, to the woman who busts into an elementary school and shoots people up. Now, I expect a child to react violently. I would think that an adult would have more control of themselves, but apparently we're losing that ability. We're seeing, again, this one young woman, I guess it was the video was originally on TikTok. It got posted on Libs of TikTok. Her reaction to things is violence. Now, if someone is attempting to hurt you, the proper response is, yes, violence. You defend yourself. But that doesn't seem to be what she's talking about. If you are touched by by somebody. She claims that people are out killing trans people. Now, I would think that the media would be reporting such a thing. I mean, they did just fawn over the Jussie Smollett hoax. But in her mind, they're out to kill transgender people when we just had an example in Nashville of a transgender person trying to kill children. Again, it's a madhouse. These people, in many ways, are, I don't know, they seem to me unhinged. Now, what I found interesting, and take it how you will. During that protest I talked about a few minutes ago, not the lady in her rant, but the protests outside the Capitol, inside the Capitol, around the Capitol, apparently, three state lawmakers, well, they joined in. They joined protesters in storming the Capitol in an anti-gun protest. Now, listen, you have feelings about that? That's fine. But just because you're a state lawmaker doesn't mean you get to break the law. You see, all three of these state lawmakers have been stripped of committee assignments. And all three are facing possible expulsion for their participation in a riot inside the state capitol. Now, I look at this and my first question is, okay, did they commit, you know, were their actions criminal? Well, you're not supposed to break in and disrupt a legislative session, which these protesters did, including the three lawmakers. Should they be expelled? Well, that's up to the other members of the legislature. But what I'm seeing here is even the people we hire to represent us, we're hiring people that have this emotional reaction, and again, to stripping Americans of their rights because they don't like what some people have used. Some people have used good tools for bad things, but they want to disarm the American people. They don't want us able to defend themselves. That may not be the reason they're doing it, but that's the effect that they want. And these three lawmakers are willing to break the law to do it, apparently. And at least they are facing punishment. Compare that to all the illegal actions we've seen out of other capitals, including the capital of the United States, where nobody faces any punishment. Now listen, I'm no fan of the Speaker of the Tennessee House, Mr. Sexton. I don't hold any animosity toward him, but I'm not a huge fan. But if members of the state house are going to act this way, then yes, they should be sanctioned, at least with a stripping of committee assignments, possibly even more. Okay, that's plenty about Nashville. Let's take a look at my second major topic, and that is the Trump indictment. And again, I found it interesting because a lot of people have made a lot of hay out of this being unprecedented. It's never happened before. But it makes me wonder, as I look at this, what does this say about our future? What does it say about the future of the Republic to take not only this indictment, but put it into a little bit of context? Let's start with the indictment itself. The indictment Trump was indicted for 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree, which, by the way, is under New York State penal law, is a misdemeanor, and whose statute of limitations has expired. However, what the grand jury is saying is that the defendant, Donald Trump, at different times and different instances, with the intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime and aid and conceal the commission thereof, made and caused a false entry into the business records of an enterprise to it, and then you have the different invoices, the different payments that were made. So they're basically saying that, listen, yes, he falsified business records, but he did so with intent to do another crime. They don't say what that crime is. Now, here's what's interesting. Again, it's a misdemeanor, not a felony. The statute of limitations has expired. The Federal Election Commission, because they're claiming this has to do with not declaring in his FEC filings the benefit he would receive, that this was a payment in order to get a benefit and it wasn't recorded properly. The FEC looked at it and says, no, there's nothing there. Federal prosecutors have failed to prosecute this. This appears to be an attempt, like I said, I've said before, at bootstrapping. Now, to me, there's so much more here. See, it's not the charge that bothers me. It's not even the bootstrapping. I mean, that's wrong, but what you have here appears to be a politically active district attorney using his position to attack a political opponent of his party, namely Donald Trump. Now, if the charges themselves were more serious, if he was charged with, you know, murder or assault or something like that, that'd be one thing. But he's talking, they're saying, you know, he didn't record financial transactions. We think he was doing it to hide something. That's basically what they're saying here. And that's being used to a political end. Now, as part of that, I look at the history. Remember, before Donald Trump was even inaugurated into office, there were those who were out they were going to try and impeach him. He was impeached not once, but twice based on false information. Information that was demonstrably false, but he was impeached. He's been harassed since he started running for president back in 2015. But the district attorney here, as a campaign promised the people of New York City that he would try, that he would indict Donald Trump. Doesn't this sound like a political hatchet job? Now, like Trump, loathe Trump, take Trump out of the picture. How is a reasonable person supposed to run for political office if politically minded district attorneys will use their position to attack their political opponents? I find interesting, again, District Attorney Bragg says that letting Trump off would normalize crime, which I find absolutely laughable, since that's basically what the Manhattan DA has been doing since he was sworn into office. He has taken, he has refused to prosecute certain crimes. He has given sweetheart sentences, very low, small, to people convicted of crimes. He's done everything to not punish criminals in the city of New York, except this one. But to me, it's worse than that. It's not simply a case of political animus. It's not simply the abuse of what is laughingly called the justice system. It's not even the accusations by Trump that the judge was specifically chosen by Bragg to be to somebody who dislikes Trump. No, I look at this as an assault not simply on the rule of law, which is bad enough. This to me looks like, it looks like an assault on the very concept of a constitutional republic. Now, take, for example, this interview with Greg Jarrett on Fox News.
You know, we haven't seen the indictment, but based on the leaks, mostly from the district attorney's office, we have a pretty good idea. And frankly, it is the most novel, if not bizarre, convoluted legal theory I think I've ever heard of. I wrote that it was cockamamie. It seems to be based on the coupling of two charges. One is a misdemeanor, falsifying a business record, and then supercharging it into a felony by, you know, sort of bootstrapping a federal campaign finance violation. you know, first of all, he's a local prosecutor. He can only charge under state laws. So, you know, I'm not sure this is going to survive judicial scrutiny. Their other problem is that, you know, the statute of limitations on the misdemeanor was 2 years. On the felony alleged, 5 years. So we're well past the statute of limitations. On top of that, Bragg would have to show that Trump was personally involved in altering business records and that he knew and understood these arcane, complex campaign finance laws, which nobody comprehends, and intended to violate those laws. I just don't see, Lawrence, how he gets there.
And to me, the question is, what is the there to which Alvin Bragg is trying to get? Is it to get a conviction of Trump? Or is it simply to so tarnish him as to make him unelectable as president? Now, Victor David Hansen is a well-renowned historian, and he had some very interesting comments on this. He said that the indictment has changed politics from the popular vote ballot election to legality, lawfare. He says, so it's politics by other means. What it means is that almost every ex-president or maybe even president or official could be the target of a publicity-seeking state or local attorney that is in the political opposition. You see what I mean about this country going crazy? About destroying the republic to have a ruling class of lawyers who will simply attack their political opponent. Now, I still have my third major topic to cover, and I will do that after this break. Before I go, though, I want to remind you, the Constitution Study is just one of several voices here on America Out Loud. I recommend you do like I do, that you check by every day to find out the latest news and goings on. But don't just check for yourself. Share the information. Do your part in spreading the word. Help other people find the articles, the podcasts, the news stories, the videos. That is how we will save the Republic, draw it back from its insanity, and secure the blessings of liberty.
Are you worried about spike proteins and how they may impact your health? Are you looking for help? The Wellness Company has an answer in the form of our clean, pure, all-natural spike formula developed by experts like Dr. Peter McCullough. The Wellness Company's spike formula includes the incredible natokinase, dandelion root, black sativa extract, green tea, and iris sea moss. Even better, the spike formula by The Wellness Company is vegan, gluten-free, and made right here in the USA, so you know that you can trust and rely on it if you're concerned about spike proteins. Buying American-made naturalistic ingredients of this quality separately costs over $100. Our spike formula is only $65.99. Get spike formula today by going to twc.health. Out Loud listeners, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout for an additional discount. Go to twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD, and get peace of mind if you're concerned about spike proteins.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. Third segment, third topic. Today we're talking about America's going crazy. And it's the American people that are going crazy. And I've talked already about the reactions, again, to me, crazy reactions to the mass murder in Nashville, up to and including referring to the murderer as a victim, to the what appears to be, has to be politically motivated indictment of former President Trump. And now I want to talk about, Senate Bill 686, the Restricting the Emergence of Security Threats That Risk Information and Communication Technology Act, or the Restrict Act. Don't you just love the stupid names they come up with these things? Now, this legislation was supposedly brought to deal with TikTok. Now, listen, I don't use TikTok. I don't have the app installed. It's not on any of my devices. If someone sends me a link to TikTok, I won't open it, because TikTok has been found to collect data on all of its users and send it to China. By the way, it's one of the reasons why I don't use Google Chrome. It's one of the reasons why I don't use an Android operating system, because they're shown to collect data. They just send it to Google rather than to China. But so there's a big brouhaha about TikTok. A lot of governments, state and local governments, and even the federal government is looking at banning it on state-owned devices. And of course, that wasn't good enough. So they came up with the Restrict Act. Now, this legislation would authorize the Secretary of Commerce to identify, deter, disrupt, prevent, prohibit, investigate, or otherwise mitigate, including by negotiating, entering into, or imposing and enforcing any mitigation measures to address any risk arising from any covered transaction by any person or with respect to any property subject to the jurisdiction of the United States that the Secretary determines possesses an undue or unacceptable risk to the national security of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a hunting license. Okay, maybe it's a bad metaphor based on the first topic we covered today, but this is basically saying the Secretary of Defense, or sorry, Secretary of Commerce, can use any means necessary to disrupt any internet transaction that they believe poses a threat or an unacceptable risk to the national security of the United States. And notice, it doesn't say foreign actors. It says by any person or with respect to any property subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. That means American citizens, ladies and gentlemen. Remember the 14th Amendment? If you're born on U.S. soil and subject to the United States, you are a natural, you are a citizen at birth. That's what this is about. See, they call it the Restrict Act. And by the way, I'm going to do an article that goes into where I'm going to go into detail about this particular piece of legislation. But here we have what is deemed to be a threat by a foreign-controlled corporation that is collecting data without the user's consent, maybe with the user's consent, maybe without, and sending it to a foreign power. And the response of Congress is to turn themselves into the ultimate censor. Now they say, well, no, we're only focusing on foreign actors. Well, there's just one problem. See, for those of you who are not familiar with the technology behind most websites today, they tend to use third-party plugins or widgets, little pieces of code, little pieces of software that allow them to do certain things. For example, on the Constitution study, I have several plugins that I use. I have one that helps that runs my online store. I have one that sends out tweets when I post content. I have one that keeps track of donations. I have one that does all my mailing lists. Now, if any one of those pieces of software is written by a third party that happens to be in a foreign country, suddenly my website falls under the Restrict Act. Which is interesting, because it seems to be, if we had a better short title for it, it would be the Restrict Freedom of the Press Act. Because that seems to be its main focus. It's not focused on interstate commerce. It's focused on restricting speech. Now, again, if they were focused on TikTok, they would mention TikTok or its parent and its parent companies. If they were specifically looking at certain bad actors. Now, maybe there's content. Again, I haven't reviewed the entire legislation yet. That's on my to-do list. Give me a week or two to get to that. But even things like if you use a virtual private network, Now think about this. A VPN, a virtual private network, is a way to hide to keep your anonymity, right? So right now, if you go to a website, the website, your service provider and the website owner knows where you come from. You have what's called an IP address, and they know roughly where you are based on that IP address. And if they can get access to certain records, your ISP knows that it was you that actually used that was using that IP address at that time to access that website. So what a VPN does is it creates a virtual network to another entity, and that's where the request comes from. So rather than your ISP knowing what who you're communicating with online, all they know is you're communicating with your VPN. The websites you hit, the services you load, only knows about the service on the VPN. Well, one of the things that VPNs are frequently used for is to obtain a foreign IP address, generally to get around national censorship laws. It's used a lot, by the way, in China, where they will get a VPN to another country in order to get access to news that the Great Firewall of China doesn't want to pass through. Based on what I've read so far, this Restrict Act is another Patriot Act. It's we were scared, therefore we're going to act and we're going to react emotionally and not logically. And if we let it pass, it truly is going to bite us in the backside. Because the way this is written, it is not designed to deal with foreign actors. It's simply designed to allow the Secretary of Commerce to shut down communication that they don't like. For example, based on what I've read so far, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but based on what I've read so far, the Secretary of Commerce could have shut down my website for pointing out that the mRNA quote-unquote vaccines, that are not legally vaccines, pointing out that they're not legally vaccines, that they've not been tested, they've not been licensed by the FDA, that they are still experimental technologies used under an experimental authorization, an emergency use authorization, a fraudulent emergency use authorization. They could determine that was dangerous to the United States, or what was the language that it used? Be an unacceptable risk to the national security of the United States because I'm telling people that the vaccines may be dangerous. And if a single piece of code in my website was developed by a foreign actor, they could shut it down. That's what this is talking about. This appears to be a very dangerous piece of legislation, and there are plenty of people that are pointing this out. The question is, will the American people listen? Not just to me. I mean, sure, you want to listen to me, that's fine. How about Ron Paul? How about Matt Taibbi? They're warning that this is a free speech. I'd say it's freedom of the press, because to me, words matter. This is a freedom of the press attack on our freedom of the press by our government. And the people that will be voting on it work for the people of the United States. Will we stand for this yet again? Or will we blindly go? Will we be scared into doing another Patriot Act? We've got to do something. They're going to come get us. They're going to kill us all. Throw away your rights. Get strip searched at the airport. You go through magnetometers everywhere because we're just terrified that some bad guy's going to come get us. Throw away our have secret foreign courts, secret warrants, secret spying on American people because we're afraid. They did it for the national security. You don't think they'll do it when they can censor information? Because it's for the national security? Do you really think they're not going to use that again? This is an overthrowing of the First Amendment. This is tyranny in action. And mostly, I believe, if it works, it'll be because the tyranny of fear. Scare the American people into giving up their rights yet again. It's one of the reasons why I say education is so important. This fear, this tyranny of fear, only works when people are uninformed. When they don't realize that the government doesn't have the legal authority to do this. That they don't have, that even with their right to regulate foreign commerce, that doesn't allow them to regulate foreign speech. Speech is not commerce. That as an American citizen, you have rights. And once you know what your rights are, you can defend your rights. You can assert your rights. But you have to know what they are. And according to John Jay, the best way to do that is to read and study the Constitution of the United States and of your state, by the way. It's what we do here at the Constitution Study. We help teach people to study the Constitution for themselves. As I said before, I'm putting together a program that I think can grow into something really meaningful. I'll give you a little preview. I've broken this program, called the Constitution Study Patriots, that's its current name, and I've broken it up into three pillars. Pillar one is education. I'm working on content to help people not only learn to study the Constitution for themselves, but to make sure they're doing so based on a solid foundation. In other words, we're not basing it on somebody's opinion. We're not basing it on what some justice said. We're actually going to study the document itself and understand why it's so important and the power that it leaves the American people and the powers it doesn't give to the federal government. Now, the second pillar will be communication. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to do that, but I want to create what I call the committees of correspondence. This is based on a letter-writing group from the colonial time, where we are able to share information to bypass the censors, where people can ask questions, share the goings-on, and possibly even rally to support those who are following a constitutional way of life. And again, do so in a way that either cannot be shut down by censors or just has so many ways we can get around the censors so that we can communicate and know what's going on. Now, the third pillar I call activation. So you got education, communication, activation. That's where I want to find people. I'm referring to them as the Constitution Study Minutemen. These will be men and women that have prepared and are ready to stand in, to support their fellow their neighbors, to support those that are willing to stand for rights, that are willing to do the right thing. So when somebody stands up and exercises their right and people come after them, there will be people willing to come up behind them and support them and shield them and give them strength in numbers. What's the old saying? Individually, you're a target. As a group, you're a force. And I believe that is what we need, especially based on what I've been talking about today. A way to look at this and not stand in fear, not let our fear drive us to make things worse, but to have the education and the sound foundation that says, wait a second, let me look at this. Let me analyze this. Is there a better way? Is there something else? Am I looking at the symptom or am I looking at the disease? Am I reacting to the emotion or am I reacting to the actual facts on the ground? Is there something I can try? Is there something I can do? Now, I can build the content. I can share it with people. But I'm one man and I can only go so far. It's one of the reasons why I ask you to share this content, whether it's the radio program, the videos, the columns I post. whether you know, I ask you to share it because that's how more people find out about the Constitution Study and about the work that we're doing here. And it only works if we work as a team, if we work together, if we do more than simply, you know, stamp our feet and share our posts and do nothing else. If we work together, we can make a difference. Because my goal here at the Constitution Study has always been to leave a nation to my daughter that is freer than the one we have now. I don't even know if we'll get to one as free as the one I inherited from my parents, but we won't know if we don't try. We may not succeed, we may not win all that we want to win, but we do the right thing because it is the right thing. As John Quincy Adams replied when he was asked why he kept fighting for abolition when his efforts kept failing, he said, "The duty is ours, the results are God's." I believe I have a duty to do the right thing and protect the rights and future of this country to the best of my ability. I leave the results up to the Almighty because I don't have the power to do that. Now, if you like this, if this is useful to you, then let other people know. They can listen to the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't listen then, all of my programs go to podcast, generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can listen in your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor, subscribe, leave a rating and review. It's how other people find the Constitution Study as well. You can find all the links at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.com. But as I have been saying, please, you need to share them if you wish to share the blessings of liberty.